Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded. From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
That's right. An hour in the studio. And it won't be an hour in the waiting room, which is what you don't want when you go to your doctor's office.
There's no wait here. That's true. That's the nice thing about
this
show.
It's a wait-free waiting room.
How does that work? All right. We're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about ultra-processed food. When you eat it, are you increasing your risk of early death? Very important. I think the more we talk about ultra-processed foods, what are they, the better off we're going to be. And then brisk walking. It is the pace that you walk that may determine whether or not you have heart rhythm problems like atrial fibrillation. Some really interesting data that was just published in the BMJ.
Oh, and what's the special recipe today?
Spring salad with goat cheese. Ooh. It's spring. It's salad time.
It's goat cheese
time.
It's
a great goat cheese. It's goat cheese.
Isn't that what people say?
It's goat cheese.
Yeah, goat cheese time.
And, anyway, it's a great recipe. You know, anything you can do with greens, especially during a good time of the year when it's spring, you want to go out, you want to have good stuff, you want to have fresh fruits and vegetables. Now is the time to do it. Spring salad with goat cheese, a goat cheese, not goat cheese. Goats are different. It is a great recipe.
All right. To the phones we goat at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462. Couldn't help it. 462-7413. Let's help out a caller now from Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask a question. You mentioned just briefly a second ago, atrial fibrillation. I'm 55 years old, about to be 56, relatively good health my whole life, never had any major health problems, no serious issues. Spent a good deal of my last 15 years, a few years ago, I retired from the National Guard, but I was in there for 13 years. So some regiment of healthy living there.
Sure.
And a few weeks back, I started feeling like my heart was skipping a beat. And over the course of a couple of days, I became more and more concerned. And then when I finally went in to see a physician, they put me in a hospital for 4 days. Told me I had atrial fibrillation.
Huh. Why did they put you in for 4 days? Were you short of breath?
The reason I went in is because I was short of breath in addition to what I was feeling in my pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And they could not get my heart back into sinus rhythm for several days. And they wanted to do some testing like an echocardiogram, EKG over and over and mm-hmm. multiple things.
Yeah, I'm going to go back for just a second for this. I assume at this point, because a lot of times people go into atrial fib, we make the diagnosis, everything is done on an outpatient basis. I mean, for the most part, people are not put in the hospital. You must have been sick in some way, pretty sick when you went into the hospital. Was that the case, or how short of breath were you?
That's really, I guess, the essence of why I'm calling, because I never felt out of sorts. I never felt...
Uh-huh.
I never had anything that would outwardly say, hey, this guy's got an issue. What I've learned is essentially the cardiologist that I've seen now twice since then suggested that the night before I started feeling these symptoms, we had a celebration down in Milwaukee with one of my children, and we were drinking, and I had consumed a fair amount of beer over the course of about 8 hours.
Uh-huh. By the way, what's a fair amount? In Wisconsin, you got to define, I mean, how much beer did you consume?
I agree.
Yeah.
I understand what you're asking.
Yeah.
I would say over the course of 8 hours, easily 8 to 10.
Okay, 8 to 10 beers. Okay, so we call it binge drinking. You binge drank the night before. That can be there. That can be part of what this is. But now let me go back to a bit. Are you in atrial fibrillation now?
No, I have not been since it's been over a month. Well, it's been about a month.
Okay. Did you go out of it with the medicines they gave you, or did they have to shock you? Or did you get out of it naturally?
I was not out of it when I left the hospital. The medications that they'd started me on apparently started working the next day because I've been in sinus rhythm since then.
Good, great. Well, by the way, do you know the name of the medicine they gave you? Was it Sotalol? What was the drug they gave you?
They gave me an amiodarone.
Amiodarone. Okay.
Metoprolol.
Okay. Got you. So you were, among other things, one of the reasons they put you in the hospital is they gave you the amiodarone. And for that, you're often hospitalized because it's a funky drug and you've got to be regulated and they have to watch your heart. So now that makes sense of why they put you in. So first of all, it sounds like you had a really good treatment. First of all, it makes a lot of sense. Good treatment. They got you out of atrial fib and now you're in a normal sinus rhythm. So a few things. You had something, this is called lone AFib. In other words, you had one episode of atrial fibrillation. You can have recurrent episodes. Usually it recurs. It's probably in your lifetime. This is probably not the only episode you'll have. It may be, but many people go on to have more episodes. Might be 6 months from now. It could be 6 years from now. But it often happens more than once. Why does it happen? I don't think we have a good handle on it. Atrial fibrillation is much more common than it used to be. We don't know exactly why. We know, by the way, that alcohol can be a risk factor for atrial fibrillation. So from a point of view of how you're living your life, I would not have more than 2 beers or 2 alcoholic beverages, period, in a day. In other words, that would be one and done. I'm sure you won't have any problem with it. Or if you do, you got to figure out how to handle that particular problem. So it's not that as if everyone drinks get it, but sometimes alcohol can actually do it. They did an echocardiogram, so they must have looked at how your heart was functioning and everything else. And then they'll make a decision. The real decision that you have to make with this is whether or not you need to be on a blood thinner. Did they discuss that with you?
I was on a blood thinner up until, again, like I said, yesterday.
Yesterday. Okay. So then they took you off of it. But that's the bottom line question. The bottom line question is, for people who have recurrent atrial fibrillation, where it comes and goes, they really have to be on a lifetime blood thinner forever, even if they're in normal sinus rhythm. For people who have the first episode of atrial fibrillation, that becomes a different question altogether. So, like you said, you're healthy, you've done work, you served in the military, and thank you for your service. But you had to do some exercise, you had to stay healthy, and so it might have just been from the alcohol. That may be all that it is. They looked at it. If the cardiologist isn't worried about anything else, it happened, and it was probably alcohol-induced. That's what I would guess.
Probably.
Yeah, but you got to follow it up. Follow it up.
I have changed my habit. I'm going to engage in that type of binge drinking going forward. It's certainly a scare. But
you want to exercise. You want to do the usual stuff, follow a more Mediterranean diet because you're at risk. And what you want to do is reduce any risk that you have for any sort of cardiac stuff. Blood pressure under control, no smoking. Like I said, other people would say alcohol free. I'm not at that point in terms of the research, but I'm certainly, at a point of reduction with that. And like you said, otherwise you want to stay healthy. That's your goal.
Yes, sir.
So, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Well, thanks for sharing that. They did a good job. They did everything right.
Yeah, good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You take care now. And thanks for sharing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic. And I'm going to read this. It's kind of, this headline's a little clickbaity, but it's a little gloom and doom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get you to click on the headline. Yeah. But it's important. It's new research. And here's the headline. Every bite of ultra-processed food will increase your chance of an early death.
Yeah, really.
Gloom and doom.
I mean, come on, gloom and doom. Really.
But it's important.
If I have my Fritos, you mean every chew of Fritos will reduce my life
by
a few seconds? Well, I'm still going to eat my Cheetos occasionally. I mean, I do. That's my go-to junk food. So let's define where ultra-processed fits. So there's a system of classification. It's four different processes. One is a food that you just eat, like an apple or an orange.
Sure.
You know, you just eat nuts that you eat.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, foods that have minimal culinary ingredients, like instead of having a peanut, you have a peanut with salt. You know, mm-hmm. and you have herbs. So you might have, instead of having just broccoli off the vine, you put some oil in it and you process it. You saute it. Group number three sort of combines those two, but it's group number four, which has a group of ingredients that you don't really understand, you know, because there are a whole bunch of things in it. Maybe there's 10 or 20. Now, Michael Pollan came out with a book a number of years ago and a thought in his book that once you get over five ingredients, it's not natural. Well, that's not really the case. You could have more than five ingredients in a pad thai that you get, at a restaurant, and that really is natural. But his point was there's a lot of ultra-processing in foods. And this particular article, which was published in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, found, at least by theory, but every 10% increase in total calories from ultra-processed foods causes you to die prematurely by 3%. Now, I have to talk about these numbers. You know, it's not junk science, but I think it's an overreach. I think that you can actually quantify that if you're going to eat a bag of Cheetos, which is about as ultra-processed as
sure.
you're going to get,
yeah.
you know, for every 10% extra calories you get from Cheetos, a certain amount of this is you're going to die. That's not the case. The issue is we have too much ultra-processed foods in our diet.
Mm-hmm.
And there are dyes and there's stuff to make it. And the reason is we basically have industrialized food. And anytime you see a bunch of ingredients, that's the case. So I think the issue is start to change your diet. Read the labels. Look at what you have. Sure, if I'm going to watch a Packer game, I'm going to have Doritos. I might have some Cheetos. But if I'm going to go home and I'm going to have a snack, I should have carrots and something else. And I should have something that maybe, you know, which is sort of a natural thing that I dip it in, which will be a salad dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And read the label of your salad dressing and see how many ingredients it is.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to take ultra-processing out of our diet because it is a risk factor for premature death.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. Let's try to help out a listener from Denver, Colorado.
Hello. I'm a 58-year-old truck driver. Been a truck driver for 34 years. Got hit with like maybe the pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes. Yeah, so, but here the last few months, the tips of my fingers have been cracking and bleeding and getting really dry, and I just assumed it was my job because at the time I hauled motorcycles, so I thought it was like for 12 hours of ratcheting and strapping down motorcycles, but then it turns out to be a symptom from the type 2 diabetes, and the tips of my fingers are really sensitive. It hurts. Everything I touch, it feels like I'm being poked with a needle. I think before, you know, I would drink a lot of coffee, and then I would think, when's the last time I drank water? So I know the coffee's dehydrating me. I figured exercise, get some circulation, stay more hydrated. But I would really like to get on top of this situation here, if possible. Thank you.
Well, there are a few things there, too. First of all, yeah, coffee, it doesn't really dehydrate you, but it does increase urination. I always say you don't drink coffee, you rent it.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody, you rent coffee.
Okay.
So there is an issue, and you should drink water. You want to hydrate, especially if you're in a truck, because it's dry in the truck. And I would highly recommend drinking, you know, periodically something that has some electrolytes in it. So I would, you know, besides Gatorade has a little bit of electrolytes in it, but there are other drinks that are good, too. So I think that's an important issue. So he may have a peripheral neuropathy. That's where the tingling comes in. Usually it affects the feet. It can affect the hands too. But also there are some skin changes that can occur with diabetes. So first thing I would do is I'd keep my skin nice and moist. So I would get a good moisturizing cream that I like that would keep moisture in on my skin. I highly recommend when you do that, go to the cosmetics counter. My mother, by the way, was in charge of a cosmetics counter at Webolt's department store in Chicago, the store for the working woman. But go there and ask the person who runs the cosmetics counter, ask them to try different hand creams to find one that you like that isn't too tacky. I happen to like a certain hand cream. I didn't know which one it is. I went to my local Walgreens, put it on, and found one that just fits me. They always have samples. That's number one. Keep your fingers hydrated all the time. Very important. Keep your body hydrated. Get your blood sugar under control, because that can make a difference. If you're smoking, you got to quit smoking. That's a big issue, and it's a big issue with peripheral neuropathy. And then, of course, you got to eat right, and you have to exercise. And that's tough to do as a trucker. Mm-hmm. But getting out, when you're getting out with your rig, you're filling up, you spend 5-10 minutes twice a day just walking around, pumping your hands, do some weightlifting, take little 3-5 pound weights, move your hands back and forth just to increase that circulation. All of this will help.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, before we take a break, Zorba, it's time to scroll through the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page.
Ba-ba-da-da.
This is Facebook feedback.
I love it. I love it. Such a dippy song.
Dippy, I like that.
It's kind of dippy.
That's a good way to describe
it. At yep. the end. It's like, really?
That is dippy. All right, Zorba. There are always plenty
of
listeners.
Why don't we have trumpets, at least?
You want trumpets? We're supposed to have fanfare, right?
Yeah, let's have some fanfare.
Let's have fanfare.
It's time to have a new Facebook.
That's my job. I got to figure that out.
Yeah, I want fanfare. Facebook feedback fanfare. I like it.
Yeah, the three F's. All right, Zorba. We have plenty of listener questions on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page.
We do, and we love them.
We love them. This is going to be a potpourri of questions. Should we just get right to it here?
Potpourri. Can never spell it, but can pronounce it.
Okay.
Can you spell it?
I know it's got a T in there.
I know.
And an OU. And a couple
things,
R's and
you know,
an
you have
I and a
dyslexia. That's why I don't do crossword puzzles. But on Scrabble, you'd get a lot of points for potpourri.
Yeah,
I'm
that's,
sure.
That's always in
Please
there.
Please go on.
Okay. This is
I don't mean to interrupt you, by the way.
This is from Jackie, who asks, Zorba, what is your favorite place from all of your travels and why?
Oh, gosh. What is my favorite
place? Put you on the spot.
Well, you know, I don't have a favorite place. Oh. I have many favorite places.
Okay.
You know, my favorite place was when Penny and I traveled for a year. We took off for a year, traveled third class throughout Asia, throughout Japan, Indonesia. She loved Bali. It was wonderful. Mm. I think my favorite moment, one of my favorite moments, was standing in front of the Taj Mahal, and I'll put it back on Facebook page.
Yeah, we saw that photo.
I mean, she's, you know, we didn't have backpacks. We had sort of L.L. Bean bags. Mm-hmm. And we're standing in front of there smiling. I look at that picture and I think, yeah.
That was a good time.
That was the spot. That was wonderful. Yeah. That was it.
That's good. All right. Walter asks, how do you decide if a recipe is healthy enough to be on your show?
Well, sometimes that's easy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not. So you look at things with recipes and you have to sort of decide. And we don't do all perfectly great recipes.
Right.
I don't believe in the American Heart Association cardboard diet, you know, where you have to limit everything. It's like the diet, just say no. You know, can I have this? No. Can you have that? No. For a long time, we used margarine. We said margarine instead of butter. And then we discovered margarine had trans fats in it. Mm-hmm. Weren't good. So I don't use margarine anymore. So we try to look at what's going on. I kind of eyeball it now. You know, so obviously deep fried chicken is not going to be good. That's really easy. Mm-hmm. And then we do an analysis of the recipe. So we do a bit of work, and sometimes it's intuitive and easy, and sometimes it's not. And over the years, it's become easier.
And sometimes we splurge and have a
not
so healthy recipe.
You know,
and
I mean,
that's life, right?
I mean, come on. I have brats. I love a Chicago hot dog.
Sure.
I mean, I love a really good juicy burger. I mean, you know, moderation in everything, including moderation.
All right, and finally,
I think Socrates said that.
Is
maybe
that
it was
him?
Aristotle.
That was Socrates.
It was one of them. It was the Stoics who actually said that. Okay. I think it was the Stoics. Please go on.
All right,
or maybe
finally,
it was the Epicureans.
Finally, Zorba.
Marcus Aurelius. He's the one who said that.
Just say Plato, and I'll move on. Finally.
Sorry.
A person. Don't eat Plato, though.
No, too much fun.
I discovered that when I was young.
We all did.
We all ate
Plato.
It's
hey,
salty.
Brad, did you eat Plato when you were young?
That's a no.
No.
Hand
you're just
signal,
not going to
no.
say anything. You just said no.
We got to get to
and
the
he
end here.
He started holding his nose. Please go on.
Finally, a person on Facebook named, you'll like this name. This person was named Sunshine Kale.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool name.
Sunshine Kale.
Sunshine Kale asks, Zorba, do you prefer cats or dogs?
Oh, I'm a dog person.
But I
like
cats.
But I like cats.
Okay.
No, I like cats.
Nothing
some dog
cats.
People don't like cats.
Right.
And some cat people don't like dogs. No. And cats like me, but I was allergic for many years for cats. Mm. Not as many years from cats. Not as much anymore. But I like dogs. But I
Your
can
dogs.
Survive with both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I like them both better than fish.
There you go.
Fish do not sing to my
wise
inner
words.
Soul.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you have a healthy living question for the good doc, just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll have more of your calls coming up, more emails, more of your voicemails, and we're going to put together a spring salad with goat cheese. So keep it right here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health.
From PRX.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio. I'm sitting right across the desk from Dr. Zorba Pastor.
That's
the
me.
Legend. He's right there.
The legend.
The icon.
The legend.
He's wearing, what is he? Oh, he's got a really cool hat. It's a ball cap.
Yeah.
It's like a burgundy dark red.
And it says Marrakesh. I've been to Marrakesh.
Got a camel
Listen
on it.
Listen to the song. I've been there. Right.
Palm tree.
Yeah. Got
it's
it.
Pretty cool hat.
Got it. It's a cool hat.
I assume
I
you
like
got
it.
It in Marrakesh?
Like it. Yeah, I got it in Marrakesh. Right.
Nice.
That's what I got. It is a cool hat. I like
cool.
It.
Cool. So was it made in Marrakesh?
No? Let's go on with the recipe.
We'll cut that out later.
Let's cut that out.
800-462-7404.
I think it's going to remain in there. Spring salad with goat cheese.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's do the recipe. What is this recipe?
Moving right along. Well, it's spring salad with goat cheese.
Sounds
so first
great.
Of all, you know, it's time of year when we think of verdant. You know, it's spring, everything. Mm-hmm. So we really do think, I think more about salads this time of year.
Things are starting
than
to grow.
I do. You know, in the wintertime, I kind of do a stretch. I have to have a salad, but now when things turn green. I don't know why. It's just naturally. So this is a really, really good salad. So start out 2 to 3 bunches of asparagus. And a bunch is, when you go to a store, it's kind of a bunch. They bunch it up, whatever you want.
All right, some asparagus.
4 ounces of snow peas, trimmed, string removed. And by the way, with the asparagus, chop off the woody ends always.
Oh, right. Okay, 4 ounces snow peas.
Head of romaine lettuce washed.
Okay, head of lettuce.
2 cups of frozen peas, fresh peas if you can get them, which is great. But if not, frozen peas will be great. Not canned peas, frozen or fresh.
All right, 2 cups of fresh or frozen peas.
3 ounces of goat cheese.
Okay, 3 ounces of goat cheese.
And if you like mint, use a cup of mint. Now, in my house, we would never use mint.
No mint.
Penny did not like mint.
Not even in a mojito?
Actually, she did eat mint in a mojito.
Ah.
That's right. Actually, she did like
one
mojitos.
One exception.
That's right, mojitos. She didn't eat it in chocolate ice cream, but mojitos. Okay.
All right, some mint leaves.
That's right. Now you've got the dressing. Teaspoon of lemon zest.
Okay, little tea lemon zest.
From a lemon.
Mm-hmm.
You have a zester? You've got a little zester.
Sure,
yeah. You got to have it. 2 tablespoonfuls of lemon juice while you're doing it.
Like
6 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
6 big tea olive oil.
I always have 3 or 4 different kinds of olive oil around, and some are more robust than others. Depends on what you like. I would use a robust olive oil and S&P.
And some S&P.
Okay, let's make it. Bring a large pot of water to a boil. Add the snow peas to the pot. 1.5 minutes, that's all, a little bit. And take it out. Add the asparagus spears to the pot. 1.5 minutes, take it out. Okay, if you have frozen peas, put them in the pot for 30 seconds, take it out. So basically, you're getting it all to the point where you can eat it in a salad. And you're going to want to put it in cold water so it gets cold right away. Immediately, you want to drain it, refresh it. Then take it, blot it on a paper towel to dry it out. Okay, that's really important. Then leave the peas in a colander to drain. You got to be careful. You can't dry the peas out, you know, with a blotter unless you're really careful with it. And then split the larger romaine leaves down the middle, smaller ones whole. Cut the asparagus stems in half at a slight angle. Shake the dressing in a jar and then combine them all together. And then on the top, put some small chunks of goat cheese. So basically, you've got snow peas, you've got asparagus, you've got some romaine, you've got some peas. Think about this. You've got goat cheese on the top, and then if you like mint, some mint on the top of that.
Sounds
and you've got
fantastic.
A really wonderful, wonderful salad. And if you would like a copy of today's recipe, go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook, where you will also find a picture of Carl and me. Now, let me tell you something. Carl has something on his upper lip now, which we call a mustache.
Oh,
which
good.
Must
I thought you were
like
going to say something
French.
Else there. Okay,
no,
good.
No, it's called a mustache. Now, I have not – well, I actually have seen him in the past intermittently with a mustache. I've seen him with a beard that kind of comes and goes.
Sure.
But he's a mustachio now. So we're going to take a picture, put that – we have become mustache buddies.
Mustache buddies.
Mustache buddies on Facebook.
You are my mustache mentor. I learned it from watching you. 800-4 Yeah, look for that on the Facebook page. Look for that
you
photo.
You like it. That's
I
right.
do. Feels good. That's yeah. Right. Feels I, every good. Once in a while, I grow a beard, and then I always kind of finish the beard with cutting a mustache for a few days just to have fun with it, and then it's gone.
See,
and
you so can we're do that. Yeah, right you're now. In age when you can do I have not cut this mustache out since I was 19. That's it.
It's amazing.
That's it. If I cut it off, I don't know what I would look like. You know what I would look like? I would look like I'm 19.
All right, look for that
There's
photo.
There's a movie
of us.
In there somewhere. There's or an SNL
be.
Routine.
Yeah, there go you on. Go. All right. 800-462-7413. That's the number. You can call anytime. Mm-hmm. That's
800-462-7413.
Let's try to help out a caller now in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there. My question is, I have a college freshman grandson who recently has been complaining about both of his knees are painful.
Uh-huh.
The pain seems to be on the side of each knee inward. He plays a lot of pickup basketball in college, lifts both for his legs and his upper body. With rest, the pain seems to go away, but he's only 19 and doesn't want to be resting and giving up his sports and workouts.
Of course.
So
of course. Yeah.
I am wondering if he just should
go ahead,
have...
Go ahead, Grandma. What are you wondering? You're the grandma. That's right. You're worried about your grandchild.
And Zorba says that with love because he's the grandpa.
That's
so
right.
this
no,
is
I
from a grandpa
that.
To a
that's
grandma. A,
that's right. I mean, you know,
totally.
You know, I'm laughing at this, but that's it. So how many grandchildren do you have? First off, how many grandkids?
Three
grandkids. Okay. And where does he fit? Is he the oldest, the youngest? Where does he fit
he
within
the
there?
Oldest.
Okay. He's the oldest. So he's the beginning. So he's doing lots of stuff and he's got some pain and discomfort. That's it. First of all, the first thing we don't do is limit activity. So the first thing really should be done if he's complaining is he should get an evaluation. That's the first thing you do. You know, is he doing something wrong? So before going to a doctor, if he has a trainer and, he's doing a sport where you have a trainer, you go to a trainer and you say, hey, I've got pain in my leg. I've got pain in my knee. Is there something I should do? Or is there something I'm doing wrong? And sometimes trainers are really good. They can look and see what's happening and what he's doing wrong. But if he doesn't have a trainer or the trainer doesn't have an answer, start out with your primary care doctor. Go look at it. Should go in and be seen and say, I've got pain in my knee. I don't know what it is. They'll do an evaluation. They may or may not do x-rays. X-rays don't always tell us everything. Sometimes we do an x-ray. Sometimes we don't. You make a clinical judgment. But then the next step often is to go to physical therapy, either physical therapy or sports medicine, which is a specialty in people who want to continue their sport and has pain. But PT would be my second go-to person. I would have them do an evaluation and treatment. And physical therapists are great for that. They can look at you. They can look at how you walk. They can look at your exercise routine. They can tell you what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. And that's the way to handle it. You know, this is not a lifetime thing, but we don't know what's going on. You know, and like
right.
you say, he's an active kid. And it's not as if you want to say, well, you're doing too much. That's the wrong thing to say. But he may be doing too much of something that may be causing the pain. So are you going to deliver the information directly to him or to your child who is the parent of the grandchild?
Both.
Both, okay.
Good approach.
Good approach, okay. Okay, both.
I cover all bases.
Both.
Yep, there
That's
you go.
Right, you cover all bases. Now, let me tell you one thing that I have learned as a grandparent. I have 7 grandchildren, and there's one thing Penny and I learned. You have to learn when you give advice, how much advice you want to give. That's it.
Oh, I've learned that.
That's an important thing to continue to have a good relationship with said child and said grandchild. And Carl now.
I agree. Carl, as a parent who gets advice from grandparents.
That's right.
That's spot on.
That's right. And I, of course, was a parent who got advice from parents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, been there, done that. So
right.
how one delivers the message is as important as the message
exactly.
itself.
Okay. So it'll all be good, I'm sure. But thank you for the advice.
Right. That's a good way. It's an approach. And, you know, he's going to want to continue doing what he's doing. He's 19, and he should. But he needs some information and evaluation to figure out how he can do it pain-free or with less pain.
Okay. That sounds great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. You can call anytime. You can leave us a voicemail. Let's go to one of those now. Let's try to help out a listener in Heartland, Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm calling regarding tinnitus. I wanted to ask the doctor, what kind of doctor should I be seeing for tinnitus? I recently got it. And my family doctor doesn't seem to know what to do. So, thank you.
Well, there isn't a lot you can do. Actually, nobody can cure tinnitus or tinnitus, no matter which way you pronounce it. It's the same thing. It's ringing in your ears.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you have to learn to live with it. Now, there's different things you can do to help you learn to live with it. So, first of all, with people with severe problems, cognitive behavioral therapy can help them not notice it because it's something that is there all the time. We know that noise generators actually make a difference when you're trying to go to sleep. That helps people. I've had tinnitus for many, many years. I always have something going in the background in the house. May not be anything specific. I often have public radio going in the background. It may be just softly, so I don't even hear it, but it's in another room, and that keeps me from listening to the ringing of the ears. And when I talk about it like now, it comes to the forefront.
Right. When you start thinking about it, it comes back.
So basically, you know, it's a problem with the ear. We don't really we know that there's certain things that can produce it, loud noises, getting on an airplane, being in an airplane, that's a loud noise. We don't think about that. Running a snowblower, you've got to wear earmuffs, you know, protection when using any gasoline-powered engines. That'll help you from getting at rock concerts if you're going to go, or any kind of concert. And it's too loud, you put in earplugs. All of those things, you can Google how to prevent tinnitus. But there's a lot of fake stuff on the net about tinnitus. Devices you can have and foods you can have and, you know, take this supplement and that supplement, it'll get rid of it. And frankly, the real issue is it's a subjective ringing that you hear. It comes from damage to the organ of corti, which actually is responsible for our hearing. But it's subjective, meaning nobody else can hear it or measure it. And so you have to figure out ways to get your brain out of it.
Yep, important stuff. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, before the break, Zorba, time again to hear from your favorite backseat drivers. This is the Grammar Police. Wait, Brad, don't hit the brakes. Don't hit the button.
You know,
don't play the jingle.
It's an earworm.
It is.
It's an earworm.
This is a new one, okay? This is not the Grammar Police. This one came from a rather pesky division of the Grammar Police. This is from the Insect Police.
Insect.
Do you recognize that song?
It's kind of obscure. Like zero.
That's called Hornets by Herbie Hancock.
Oh, Hornets.
Are you a Herbie Hancock fan?
I listen to Herbie, you know, Hornets by...
Yeah, did that sound like insects or hornets in the background?
Maybe a little bit.
Maybe.
You know, I thought it would be the flight... I thought it would be more like the flight of the bumblebee.
Oh, I should have gone with that.
You know,
why don't you make the jingles? That would probably be better. I think it'd be more obvious and maybe make more sense.
Yeah, nobody would listen. It would shut them off and the show would be done if I made the jingle. You got to know where you're strong. strong set is and where your weak set is.
Well, you know what? I think Zorba's going to at least tap dance for us sometime because he is taking tap dancing lessons.
That's right. That's right. Shuffle off to Buffalo.
There you go.
I should have brought my shoes in. I'm going to my class tonight. And you know what? I'm not very good. I'm not very good
at tap dancing. That's all right. You've got to start somewhere.
Hey, I took tap dancing, Penny, and I took it here in Madison, but I took it in Chicago. I learned to tap. Not very good. Not very, you know, was not a good tapper because I have no sense of rhythm. You know, I have minimal sense of rhythm, you know, but anyway, I did tap. But when I got my medical degree at the University of Illinois, I tapped across the stage to pick it up. I did shuffle off to Buffalo,
and the
dean was not happy.
Didn't like that,
It's a solemn occasion.
Yeah.
It's like, why is this person tapping?
Right.
He frowned, but he still gave me my degree.
He didn't withhold the degree. That's
important. Did not withhold the degree.
All right. The following
tap your way to success. That's what I always say.
That's your next book. The following email. This is from James in Spokane, Washington. Dear Dr. Zorba, dust mites are not insects, as you stated on a recent show.
Really?
Mites and spiders are arachnids.
Oh, I didn't know a mite was arachnid.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you know, we lumped them together as insects, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean,
they're in a separate thing. Spiders
this is
are
the
not
insect police,
right.
So they know.
The
they know their
yeah,
stuff.
They do. So James, a mite must have six legs or something.
Well, James goes on. Yeah, yeah. You just predicted the future, Zorba. Most adult insects have six legs, whereas most mites and spiders have eight legs.
Eight legs, right.
Also, no known arachnids have wings, but many adult insects do. Hence, mites and spiders do not fly. However, some of them balloon with threads produced by their web spinner glands.
Balloon with threads? Oh, you mean they can float?
I think so.
Yeah, they can float.
James says, since much human healthy misery is caused by both insects and arachnids, it's good to know the difference.
Yeah, it is
I like
good.
When the insect police chime in.
Misery,
thanks, James.
That's right. There are a lot of insects around, so but they're important.
They're all around us.
We don't think of them as important, but they're important, and they're, you know, they're all these things. But I didn't know that a mite was an arachnoid, but now I know it. So if I'm ever in a Trivial Pursuit game,
there you go.
I can answer that.
Do you ever do bar trivia, Zorba?
Not at all.
You've never done that? You'd be great. You'd be the medical ringer.
I'm not a bar person.
Okay.
I'm not a bar person.
How about a bowling alley trivia?
Bowling alley. Well, they drink at bowling alleys.
They do.
Don't they do that in the sixth frame? The middle of the sixth frame?
There's something there.
It's the beer frame.
Chime in, listeners. Let us know what that is. This is Wisconsin. People know bowling.
They do. Well, Chicago. My father bowled, but they all smoked in bowling alleys when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Was there a cloud? Did you ever go into bowling alleys?
Oh, yeah.
There was always a cloud of smoke. That's where, you know, you could smoke cigarettes and cigars with impunity. They must have smoke-free bowling. Well, I'm sure they're smoke-free.
Well, smoke-free now. Yeah. Unless you go to Europe. Do you want to bug Zorba about something?
Unless you go to Europe.
Yeah. They still smoke a lot in Europe.
No, they
certain
don't.
Parts of Europe.
No, they don't. No,
no?
I don't think
we
so.
In France two summers ago. There's quite a bit of smoking going on.
Outside.
Inside some bars,
really?
Too. Oh, yeah.
You went to different bars than I did.
That'll be for another show. Do you want to bug Zorba about something? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And of course, through Facebook.
That's true. We'll have more of your calls coming up, more
anytime.
Emails. Mm-hmm. Anytime, anytime. More of your voicemails and another healthy living topic to discuss. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. That's a lot of locations.
It's a lot of locations.
Right. But you know what you're listening to. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health, and he's right across the desk from me right there.
That's right. We're going to talk about walking.
Let's do it. Let's talk about walking.
Do you walk? You walk with the kids?
Sure. I like walking.
Yeah, you walk. Do you stroll? Do you walk quickly? How do you walk?
Just a medium pace, probably.
Medium pace.
Yeah.
Well, this is really interesting. So first of all, cardiac arrhythmias are a big issue. Atrial fibrillation has gone up tremendously over the last 20 years. It's, I think, doubled or tripled. Huge increase in atrial fibrillation. We don't know. There are 60 million cases worldwide. Atrial fibrillation can be associated with stroke if it's untreated and if you are not on a blood thinner. So it's a big issue. And we don't know really what causes it. We now think alcohol may be an issue. It may be the way you were born with your heart. We don't really quite understand it. So the issue is whether or not there are things that you can do that will reduce the risk of getting atrial fibrillation. So there's the United Kingdom Biobank, and they took roughly 400,000 participants who actually exercise, and they periodically put on, you know, a smartwatch, or they put on, you know, a step counter, and they look at walking speed. And they've been doing this for years. They've been gathering it for years, looking at people walk, how much they walk, and this is part of their ongoing attempt in the United Kingdom to get people healthier. So they looked at an average age of participants, 55 and older, roughly half were women, half were men. And they looked at them, and they looked at their walking pace. And there were three walking pace: a slow pace, a stroll, an average pace, where people are walking kind of, you know, not quickly, but walking at a good pace. And then the brisk walkers, the people that were actually fast walkers. And they followed them over a period of 13 years. Okay, so they followed them. They went in and looked at a bunch of data to find out. And then a number of those people developed cardiac arrhythmias, atrial fibrillation, other cardiac arrhythmias, including a slow, abnormally slow heart rate, and then a bunch of ventricular heart rates. But they looked at these different heart rhythm disturbances that people developed over a period of years, and they discovered that people who walked at a good pace or a brisk pace, and we kind of know what it is, and they define it of whether or not it was like 2 miles, you know, 2 miles in an hour was actually a slow pace, you know, because you were doing a mile every 30 minutes. That was a slow pace. And they looked at people who walked at a quicker pace, and at quicker pace walkers had significantly less atrial fibrillation and other arrhythmias. So it wasn't just the number of steps you took, but it was how quickly you actually walked. So these were not people who were running. These are people who are just walking at a brisk pace. So the bottom line here, and it's very interesting, is that how quickly you walk may determine whether or not you have a rhythm disturbance. Hmm. So it's not just walking maybe, and my number, I don't believe in the 10,000 steps. I think 10,000 steps is a good number. I think once you get to about 5,000, you're doing okay. 7,000, you crossed a line that's good. 10,000 is great. But when you're walking, think about walking briskly for maybe 5 or 10 minutes a day, maybe 10 minutes twice a day. Just get out there and say, I'm walking. I'm going a little bit faster. And that may help keep you from getting atrial fibrillation or keep you from getting it under control. This is the first study of many studies that are going to come out, I think, that are looking at this. And once again, we're humans, we're made to walk, we're not made to sit down in front of our TV all the time. And there's something else with walking that I think that is important. Having stuff in your ears while you're walking is fine, but looking at your smartphone as you're walking is a risk factor. So I'll give a good example. Came into the studio today, and I've got to make a right-hand turn off of a street onto another street. And I'm very careful, and I'm looking. And there is a young woman walking across the street in the crosswalk. I have to stop for her. And she's looking at her phone actively and doesn't see that I'm a car that's stopped. And then as she gets to the end, she looks at me and looks up. And I realize this is a risk factor for sudden death. Because what if I hadn't stopped?
Sure.
What if I'm moving a little forward and I'm not doing that? And looking at your phone is a problem. So when you're walking, put your phone away. If you want to listen to music, that's fine. But if not, there's a special button on your phone that's really good for people to exercise. It shuts it off.
There's a power button on the phone?
There's a power button.
I didn't know the phone let you turn it off.
The phone lets you turn it off. Or you can put it in airplane mode. That's really easy. And then no one will bother you. Because how often is something really important come on the phone to you when you're exercising? And the answer is, hardly ever, unless you're waiting for an important call from your kids. That's different.
Let's go back to the phone. Speaking of the phones, 800-462.
But you like that.
I do.
Call from the kids.
Yeah.
I saw that
those
in your
are
face.
Important.
You see, those are important. That's right. Well, do your kids have a watch yet where they can call you?
Yeah, my oldest has a watch.
Specialized watch.
We're holding out as long as we can.
Yeah, but
on
tell them what's the watch? What is it? A special watch? What kind of watch is it?
It's a smartwatch, so he can make calls. We can, you know.
You can limit.
We can limit,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's what it means. So you can limit, but then he can call you, tell you he's going to be late on the bus and other stuff.
He doesn't use it that much, which is kind of funny. He begged for one, and then now that he has one, we're like, we can't get a hold of him now, and he's off somewhere in the neighborhood. We don't know where he is.
But
we can track him, I guess.
But that's okay. You don't want to track him.
I know.
You don't want to track him. In the neighborhood, you don't want to track him.
No.
Would your parents, I mean, what if your parents tracked you? First thing you do is say, oh, I forgot my watch.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sounds like you've thought of this.
Of course. Of course. We all have.
Yeah. All right. We got to get back to the show here. Wait, this is the show, though, right?
That's
this is still
800-462-7413.
The show. 800-462-7413. Call anytime. That's
800-462-7413.
Let's go back to the phones now. Let's try to help out a caller in Coleman, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Hi, Carl. I'm a longtime listener, and I would like to have some input on Botox for the bladder.
Sure.
My bladder muscle has weakened. I do the exercises.
Yes. The Kegels. Right. Right, right, right.
Yeah. I have some information on Botox from my urologist.
Sure.
But I would like your opinion. But also the medication I find to be prohibitively expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if you thought Botox in the bladder was a safe thing.
So you mean the medication, you mean Botox would be prohibitively expensive to do or other medicines that you're taking?
Yeah, the pills I meant, yeah. I tried, I looked into that. Even in Canada, they're over $500 a month.
There's one thing that you should try before you try the Botox, and the Botox may indeed work for you. Have you gone to a physical therapist who specializes in pelvic floor exercises to help incontinence?
No, I have not.
That's what you should do.
Oh, okay.
Talk to your doctor. They're physical therapists who actually help with incontinence and specialize with incontinence. And I would do that first because there are a variety of things that you can do with incontinence. It's also timing the bladder, timing when you go to the washroom. But I would highly recommend that before you do Botox. Botox can be good, stays for a while, and of course you have to repeat it. It's not a one-and-done situation. But I would go to PT first to do that. Bladder training can make a difference. And then there are classes on bladder training that also recommend that you do some other things. So I would do that first. And if not, I think Botox, that's the way I would go if I had the problem.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a listener's email now. This is a question from a listener, John, in Appleton, Wisconsin, who writes, "Hello, Dr. Pastor. I love your show and have followed you for many years."
Neat.
That's nice.
Neat. Very nice.
John says, "I was wondering if you have any recommendations for books about aging.
Mm-hmm.
I would really appreciate any information that you can share."
Well, you could go get my book from the library, The Longevity
There you go.
Code.
There you go.
The Longevity Code, Your Personal Prescription for a Longer, Sweeter Life. I wrote it 20 years ago. And I have to tell you, and I did a PBS show. I went on a book tour. We had about 50,000 copies sold, which was really, really good for a self-help book. And then I never read it for years. I didn't want to read it. It's kind of an odd thing because—
I get it. Reading your own work, listening to your own stuff. I get
it. Recently, because I'm in the process of doing a new graphic novel, that's what I would like to do on this. And I started reading what I wrote 20 years ago, and I thought, actually, this is pretty good.
It holds up.
Much of it I would do the same way. Some of the stuff, the advice would be a little different. But the real issue is, if you're looking to, you know, really longevity, it's really a broad stroke that you want to use. So I go to reliable sources, not necessarily a book. I go to reliable medical sources, you know, Mayo Clinic, you know, Johns Hopkins information, Cleveland Clinic. I like to look at that with reliable sources. I often look at health letters. The Harvard Health Letter is excellent. Berkeley Wellness Letter is also excellent. I just think these are good ways to keep in track. Listening to our show, that's what we do with the show all the time. I don't think there's one thing to really look at. I think you do use a broad stroke. And the more you read and the more discerning you are, the better the information is going to be. And the more you'll figure out how you're going to apply it to you. So I think of it as sort of two broad categories. There's knowledge and there's wisdom. So knowledge are facts, but wisdom are knowing how to apply the facts. So knowledge is knowing, for instance, that the tomato is a fruit. Mm-hmm. And wisdom is knowing that you don't put tomatoes in a fruit salad. That's kind of the like broad that. Stroke, the difference. So the more you read, the more you discern, the better off you're going to be.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. Here's someone from right here in Wisconsin.
I had my prostate removed about a year ago, and my PSA level was 1.2 6 months ago. Do I have to take radiation or not? I'm 76 years old. Thanks.
Well, there are a couple of things involved. So first of all, I can't answer that question, you know, because I don't know all of the information. Second of all, when they usually, you know, there are two things when you've got prostate cancer. You either have a prostatectomy, they remove the prostate, or you have radiation. It's usually one or the other. But then sometimes if you still have a PSA level, which means there's still some prostate tissue there, they may then follow that up with radiation. Very individual thing, lots of data points there of what they use. And sometimes they will also give you a drug such as Lupron, which is a drug that is an anti-testosterone drug. So it's a complex issue. But I can give you a broad stroke. It's important to have a good relationship with your urologist who did the surgery, and it's also important to have a good relationship with an oncologist, which will look broadly at the cancer and work with the urologist together to come up with the best answer for you. Very individualized. So the answer is, if you still have a PSA level, there's something they're going to do for it to reduce that PSA risk. Because the question is it because of the prostate, or is it because the prostate tissue is somewhere else in your body? That's the question. Did it metastasize and go somewhere else? And that's where you need to have really a good relationship with your doctors.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, before we head out today, Zorba, time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind. It's
again,
your favorite
again.
Segment. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the doc, oh, oh, oh.
Beautiful.
Maybe I should give up tap and start singing.
That would be great. And if you just imagine adding an accordion to that right there.
I know,
playing accordion,
you're big on the
singing.
Accordion.
I'm
it's
really
in the basement.
Pushing for this,
one of
Zorba.
These days, I'm going to bring it in. I can't play it, but I have too many buttons, not enough time.
It's another book title for you. All right, Zorba, the following email is from Robert, who writes, "Love your show, Zorba, but recently you were discussing the relative benefits of exercise in men versus women. You made the statement that exercise reduces our risk of mortality. Last time I looked, the rate of mortality in all of us was 100%. Keep up the good work." That's true.
That's true.
Robert
That's
has a true. Point there.
That's true. It is 100%. Kudos.
Yeah. All right. So Zorba agrees with the disagreeer this time. Do you deathly disagree
oh,
with
so
the good
funny.
Doc? Just
oh,
post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@wpr.org.
All right. Should we do this again next? Zorba, you liked
yes,
that one, didn't
I
you?
I liked it. I liked it.
All right. If you missed anything during the show, or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the
anytime,
web.
Anytime. At Zorba.org.
ZorbaPastor.org.
That's right. I'm so busy laughing, I can't even
joke.
Think of the website.
All right, that's ZorbaPastor.org, or on where else? Where else are we?
Facebook.
Right? That's where we're at.
I'm stuck in the joke.
Don't forget,
it's
you can call us.
It's not a joke, it's true.
It's funny. It's very good job, Robert. You can call us anytime to leave us your question at
800-462-7413.
Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.